Pure love, pure joy, pure devotion, pure open-hearted, uninhibited worship of God never fits into this world. It exposes us. It makes us look foolish. It breaks rules, and it often evokes resistance, even hatred.
That's the Reverend Peter Wallace, and today he brings you an inspiring message entitled, Let's Dance. I'm your guest host, Kim Buchanan, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Today's program is a bit different, and here's our guest host, the Reverend Dr. Kim Buchanan, to tell us why.
Today on Day One, we're turning the tables. As the preacher on last week's program, I'm pleased to introduce the Reverend Peter M. Wallace, who you know as the host and executive producer of Day One. Peter has served with a parent organization since 2001, currently as president and executive director of the Alliance for Christian Media. He earned his undergraduate degree in journalism from Marshall University in Huntington, West Virginia, and his master's degree from Dallas Theological Seminary in Dallas, Texas. Prior to his ordination as an Episcopal priest 4 years ago, he took Anglican Studies courses at Candler School of Theology at Emory. He is the author of 10 books and the editor of a new book coming out this summer entitled Day One, Faith and Science in the 21st Century, a formation resource for youth and adults. Peter, welcome to the other side of the microphone for a change.
Thank you so much, Kim. And I have to say, it's a little scary on this side.
Oh, you're going to do just fine. We'll get through it together. So, Peter, what's it like to be able to meet and work with so many incredible preachers?
Like you, of course. No, that's been the huge blessing of my life, having worked with this organization, this program for 17 years, starting back when it was the Protestant Hour, and getting to meet with so many wonderful men and women from a whole range of denominations, and to develop friendships and relationships with those that have encouraged me, and hopefully encouraged them as well. But it is truly a blessing.
Well, you are a blessing to us.
Well,
yes. You've been involved with this ministry since early 2001, but it's evolved over the years a good deal, hasn't it?
It sure has. When I started in 2001, there were four denominations who cooperated on the program. They shared rotated programs, and they funded the program and all the work. And they had a producer on their staff of their communications department at their denominational headquarters who selected their preachers and came to Atlanta. And in the early 2000s, one by one, budgets had to be cut. And so we had to kind of reinvent ourselves as an independent organization. And we did that a couple of ways. We broadened the number of denominations that we invited preachers from, but still in the broad mainline family of historic Protestant denominations. And then we also developed a Day One advisory board of noted pastors, scholars, professors, church leaders from that variety of denominations to help us not only vet preachers for the program, but also to lend credibility to who we are, because previously, the denominations chose their own speakers, and we had to go out there and ask people to come preach as well. So it's been working very well. It's always kind of touch and go, but we've always kind of evolved ever since then because of the changing realities of the world and the nonprofits and the church. In 2004, we merged with our Episcopal partner, the Episcopal Media Center, to form the Alliance for Christian Media. But the program has been on every week since 1945, and we still haven't missed a week, so we're glad
for
that.
Wonderful. While you began as executive producer in 2001, you didn't become the program host until 2005. How did that happen?
Well, we had a wonderful host. Previously, for about 50 years, we had a host named Don Elliott Heald, and he was an active lay person in the Episcopal Church, but he was also the general manager of our flagship radio station, WSB Radio, and the TV station. And he did this on the side. He retired, and we brought in Rick Dietrich from Columbia Theological Seminary. He was a faculty member there. This was before my time. And he did a wonderful job with the program from 1999 to 2005. But he left the seminary and Atlanta to take a church as its pastor in Virginia. So my boss at the time, the Reverend Canon Skip Schuetig, said, "You do it." So suddenly I was the host.
Okay. You helped rename the program from the Protestant Hour to Day One in 2002, 16 years ago, though the Protestant Hour name is still revered. Mm-hmm. Why did it change?
Well, that's an interesting story. I grew up knowing about the Protestant Hour. My father was a United Methodist minister, and the Protestant Hour was a big deal. But the first week that I came onto the job in 2001, the four producers from the denominations all communicated to me one of the first things we had to do was change the program. And I was a little surprised at that, but they said the name Protestant Hour was kind of dated in terms of media. Mm. Radio stations weren't crazy about it. Also, there was some confusion about it, especially to non-Protestant churchgoers. You know, what were we protesting? I got that question occasionally. And it was never an hour, you know, and that was part of it. They wanted something a little more open and welcoming, and we worked real hard on that name and suddenly came up with the name Day One, which expressed the first day of the week, which is Sunday, when we air on most of our stations. The first day of creation brought light, and we're trying to bring light through this gospel message. And it's a hopeful, you know, the first day of the rest of your life. So we thought it worked well and adopted it, as you say, 16 years ago, although some people still call it the Protestant Hour.
What's ahead for the Day One ministry?
Well, there's a lot going on right now. We're developing a brand new website, and if people haven't gone, I would assure them that they would find a lot of resources for their faith and their walk in the world, their videos, their audio podcasts, their, of course, the program podcast and transcripts, and they go back for many years. We're expanding the archives, and we'll soon have the Protestant Hour program archives on the website, as well as other sermon archives. So if you're interested in inspiration, or if you're a preacher looking for material for a sermon, it's a real wealth of resources. We're also hoping to develop some new podcasts in the days ahead that would be distributed through podcast platforms like iTunes and Stitcher, as the Day One program is. And so we're very excited about all that. And so keep listening, and we'll keep you posted.
Oh, we will. And this summer, Day One is publishing a new resource for churches and small groups. Tell us about that.
Well, we're very excited about that. We're working with Church Publishing Incorporated, which is the Episcopal Publishing House, to put together a resource book that also draws on the audio and video that we produced for the Day One Faith and Science series of a few years ago. We have 8 fantastic preachers who participated in that series, and their work is reflected in this book. And it's an 8-session or a 16-session Sunday school or small group course for adults or youth to tackle some of these major issues of science in the light of faith. And so we're very excited about how churches might be able to use that in small groups. And so that's coming out in August, just in time for the fall Sunday school season.
There you go. So. Rally Sunday is what we used to call it.
That's right.
What brings you the most joy about working on the Day One program?
Well, for one thing, we have a fantastic team. And I have to say, our director of production, Donald Jones, has been putting together masterfully this program for many years, going back into the days of tape, 28 years, in fact. He loves the fact that it's digital now. He's heard, I don't know how many sermons in his life. God bless him. But he does an amazing job to the point that radio stations compliment us on how we sound, and they're proud to have us on their schedule. We also have a wonderful staff in our director of development, Pat Reagan, our administrative assistant, Ethel Ware Carter, our board, our advisory board. They are all so engaged and positive and innovative. It's just a joy. But even more than that are the comments that we get from listeners. And we just love hearing from listeners, whoever they are. We hear from preachers who are so grateful for the insights that we share, that they then in turn share with good credit with their congregations. But also the folks who are on their way to church or they're getting ready for church. People tell me that they hear me every week in their shower or in their bed waking up. It's a little disconcerting, but it's just wonderful, especially for those who cannot get to church. And so many folks have told me that Day One is their worship experience, and to hear these good words from these incredible preachers is such a blessing. So that is my blessing.
You're also an Episcopal priest, but you've had a rather ecumenical journey, haven't you?
Yes, I have. As I said, my father was a United Methodist minister. I grew up as a PK. It was a wonderful growing up experience in my home church in Huntington, West Virginia, Johnson Memorial. I got to go back there a couple of years ago and speak, and it was quite a joy. So I went to Dallas Theological Seminary, which is an independent seminary, but it's sort of along the lines of Baptist or something like that. I was in a variety of those sorts of churches for some time, but really lost and found myself in the Episcopal Church one Sunday morning and felt that I was at home. And so it took many years of involvement before I felt the call to the priesthood. And so now I try to be involved in the diocese as an assisting priest. For 2 years, I was the priest in charge of a wonderful church in Oakwood, Georgia, just north of Atlanta, and wonderful, wonderful time. And so it's a rich part of my life, and I get to kind of be on the front lines in church settings as well as our preachers. So it's helped me to kind of get a better grasp of what's going on in our preachers' lives as well.
And you've written 10 books on the Christian life, mostly with a devotional approach. Why is that an important part of your life and ministry?
I think ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a writer of some kind. I grew up reading comic books, and Stan Lee was a hero of mine. And I got to correspond with him and almost worked with him on a project, but he was a huge influence in my life in terms of wanting to be a writer. In Sunday school, actually it was in Vacation Bible School in the church I was growing up, I remember Mrs. Robinette had as one of our projects to create a newspaper as if it were published during the time of the Apostle Paul. And I had such a great time making up news stories about this crazy Paul and a little cartoon and an ad for a chariot maker and that sort of thing that I think that led me into a journalism career. And I went to Marshall University and got a degree in journalism and worked for a newspaper in West Virginia, actually two. One was called the West Virginia Hillbilly, and the other was the Nicholas County Newsleader, both of which, alas, are now defunct. But I've always loved writing. And then when I felt my call to the ministry, it was more a call to communication. And I really wrestled with whether I was being called to the pastorate. Of course, as a PK, I saw both sides of what that looked like, and I knew it was a very difficult job. And I tested it. I did a long internship at a local UCC church of all things in Dallas, Texas at the time. And I was there for a year and did everything you could possibly do. And at the end of that, I just sensed, not yet. And really followed my call to communicating faith. And I've done that in a number of ways over the years, but finding this position here has been kind of the culmination of, I think, all the strands of my life, and I just thoroughly love it.
We love that you do it. Your sermon today draws from the Old Testament and Gospel passages for this Sunday, 2 Samuel 6 and Mark 6. Would you read portions of them for us?
Be happy to. From 2 Samuel, David and all the people with him set out and went from Baal, Judah, to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who is enthroned on the cherubim. David and all the house of Israel were dancing before the Lord with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. So David went and brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed an ox and a fatling. David danced before the Lord with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. As the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. And then from Mark chapter 6, Herod himself had sent men who arrested John, bound him, and put him in prison on account of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because Herod had married her. For John had been telling Herod, "It is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife." And Herodias had a grudge against him and wanted to kill him, but she could not. For Herod feared John, knowing that he was a righteous and holy man, and he protected him. When he heard him, he was greatly perplexed, and yet he liked to listen to him. But an opportunity came when Herod, on his birthday, gave a banquet for his courtiers and officers and for the leaders of Galilee. When his daughter Herodias came in and danced, she pleased Herod and his guests. And the king said to the girl, "Ask me for whatever you wish, and I will give it." And he solemnly swore to her, "Whatever you ask me, I will give you, even half of my kingdom." She went out and said to her mother, "What should I ask for?" She replied, "The head of John the Baptizer." Immediately she rushed back to the king and requested, "I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter." The king was deeply grieved, yet out of regard for his oaths and for his guests, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately the king sent a soldier of the guard with orders to bring John's head. He went and beheaded him in the prison, brought his head on a platter, and gave it to the girl. Then the girl gave it to her mother.
Peter, we look forward to hearing your sermon entitled, "Let's Dance." Thank you for sharing it with us.
It's certainly my pleasure, and thank you.
If you'd like to listen again to today's program or read or share a transcript of Peter Wallace's sermon, visit Day One online at dayone.org. Or for a free printed sermon transcript, call toll-free at 888-411-DAY1.
I have a confession. I've got no rhythm. When it comes to dancing, I have the proverbial 2 left feet. A few years ago, Time magazine reported that scientists had confirmed that this is an actual condition. I quote, "A 23-year-old man named Matthew has been identified as the first documented case of beat deafness, meaning he cannot feel or move to music's beat,
Matthew moves to music at a pace unrelated to its actual rhythm. The story says he's not tone deaf. He can sing in tune and recognize familiar songs. Scientists think, with further study, beat deafness may join tone deafness as a music-specific disorder. It could also explain the phenomenon known as dad dancing. Well, I may not have beat deafness, but for me, way back when, those junior high mixers, the high school prom, they were sheer torture. I did best at slow dances where you just hold on and try to move together in a circle, though it did make me a little dizzy. With faster songs, I just tried to move my feet and arms in some kind of animated way, but I'm sure I looked like Elaine on Seinfeld. Do you remember that episode where she dances to great ridicule from her friends? Yeah, that way. Thankfully, I'm no longer required to attend dances like that, but I do admire those who are able to move so gracefully. Whether because of their training at the Bolshoi Ballet, or on the Broadway stage, or at Arthur Murray's dance studio. And yes, there are times when I want to move to the rhythm of God's Spirit. Sometimes I just want to let loose and dance before God. Our scripture texts today focus on two dances, both of them really quite provocative. First is King David's dance. Israel had won a huge victory after the Holy Ark of the Covenant had been captured and kept for 20 years in a foreign, godless land. The Israelites were returning it to the city of David. Glorious! This was the most sacred object in the Israelites' worship because it signified the presence of God Almighty in their midst. They were so excited about their victory that they couldn't help but dance as they moved along the highway to the capital. As they carefully carried the sacred ark on a new cart back to its home, the text says, David and all the house of Israel were dancing before the Lord with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. It sounds wild, and it must have lasted a long time. So David brought the ark of God to the city of David with rejoicing and lots of sacrifices and lots of dancing. Again, the writer says, David danced before the Lord with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. They are going crazy. And that linen ephod, what the writer is telling us, is that David wasn't very well covered. In fact, David's wife, Michal, sees him out the window leaping and dancing before the Lord in this tiny ephod, and she despises him in her heart. He was not dad dancing. Michal is so embarrassed by her husband's uninhibited, unrestrained, unencumbered dancing in praise of God that she hates him. Well, there's some relationship baggage between them, too. In the verse after our passage today, she castigates him for his lewd dancing. That's the way she saw it. David defends himself. He considered it simply dancing without shame before the Lord, dancing with all his might. What might that have been like, to dance before God so openly, without inhibition or shame? What if we worshiped God with all our might? Oh, I'm not saying we should leap and dance like David did, and if I started doing that right now, you would be glad that this is not video. But what if we opened our hearts fully, without reservation, to our loving God in worship? The other dance we read about today, also no doubt considered lewd by many who witnessed it, is recounted in Mark chapter 6. It's quite melodramatic and grisly. A story of political intrigue and manipulation. It's not unlike something we might watch on television, on House of Cards or Game of Thrones or even a telenovela. And here Barbara Lundblad provides some background. Jesus is on the loose. He's been performing miracles and teaching hard truths. He's been challenging the status quo and its all-too-easy agreement with a culture that presumes might or wealth or status or fame makes right. Of course, there are costs to pay for his doing that. That's the way of the world. then and now. Mark tells us that King Herod has been hearing all these stories about Jesus, casting out demons, curing the sick. That's Herod Antipas, the son of the Herod who was the crazy king at Jesus' birth. So Jesus is getting famous, and gossip and rumors are spreading too. Some say he is John the Baptizer raised from the dead, or else Elijah or a prophet of old come back to life. Herod hears all this gossip, but he latches on to the rumor that this healer is really John raised from the dead, and he is scared because he is the one who'd had John beheaded. Then Mark gives us a flashback, answering the question, hey, whatever happened to John the Baptizer? Turns out Herod had arrested and imprisoned John at the urging of his wife Herodias, who had been his brother Philip's wife. Now Philip wasn't dead, but King Herod took his brother's wife Herodias as his own, and John the Baptist was outspokenly opposed to it. Herod, you are breaking the law. So his wife Herodias, as Mark puts it, had a grudge against John. He was annoying her with his prophetic rants. She wanted him dead. But Herod feared John and refused to have him killed. Mark says Herod knew John was righteous and holy, so he protected John. And Mark indicates that Herod actually liked to listen to John's sermons. They confused him. He was greatly perplexed, Mark says, and yet, he adds, he liked to listen to him. It's all quite dysfunctional. Delmer Chilton says Herod is a perplexed seeker, a dabbler in the mysteries of God. He believes just enough to keep him awake at night, but not enough to change his way of thinking or living all the rest of the time. So, Mark continues the story, on his birthday, Herod gives a banquet for all the high muckety-mucks. His stepdaughter comes in and dances for the partygoers. Now, this daughter was probably actually Herod's niece, the daughter of his illegal wife and his brother, and she ended up marrying another of Herod's brothers, her uncle. It all really does sound like a bad soap opera. Later tradition and legend names her Salome and tells us she wore 7 veils. So what happens? Mark says she pleased Herod and his guests. And you can imagine how, but don't, because this is a religious program. Herod is so thrilled and enthused by her performance that he promises her anything, even half his kingdom. She has no idea what to ask for, so she runs to her mother, who immediately responds, "Ask for the head of John the Baptizer." The girl runs back to the king and adds a little detail to the request. "I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter," as though it were another course in the meal. Yikes! Well, Herod is deeply grieved at this, but he is between a rock and a hard place. He really doesn't want to kill John. He was intrigued by this rustic preacher, but he'd promised her anything and didn't want to look bad before all the officials and guests. So he orders it done. What might this dance have looked like, with choreography that thrilled Herod so much he'd give anything to her, even have his pet prophet put to death? It may have looked very much like the way David was dancing with all his might, scantily clad. But these two dances were oh so different. The wonderful United Methodist minister and poet Steve Garnas Holmes offers us some wisdom on the contrast between them. Two dances. One is soaked in depravity, yet praised. The other is an honest act of worship, yet scorned. One is entangled in secret desires and schemes, in bitterness and revenge. The other is offered freely and simply. One dancer reveals too much fear, too much of the palace's corruption. The other dancer reveals too much joy, too much of himself. One dance is caught up in calculations for getting what one wants. The other is a pure gift to God. One is designed to please others. The other is offered without regard to what others think. It is offered solely to God. And here's the rub. The one that becomes murderous is the one that fits into our culture, that follows the rules, that functions as an acceptable tool of those in power. It's the dance of the system. But the dance that is pure worship, the dance of the heart, somehow that dance becomes a scandal, at least to some. Fitting in to get what we want in this world is usually rewarded, often by something no less awful than exactly what we wanted, and then by being used by someone else to get what they want. But pure love, pure joy, pure devotion, pure open-hearted, uninhibited worship of God never fits into this world. It exposes us. It makes us look foolish. It comes from a place where who we are, our naked self, is lovely, and it is offered without reservation. It breaks rules, and it often evokes resistance, even hatred. The truth is, life is a dance. We're going to dance, all of us, whether we feel we have two left feet or have been trained for the ballet. The question is not whether or even how we'll dance, it's why. Do we dance for the nefarious, scheming reasons Salome danced? Or do we dance for the pure, unadulterated joy of worship, opening ourselves to God and God's will as David danced? We dance every day in this world, in our interactions with our family, our loved ones, our co-workers, our neighbors, even strangers. We dance to the tune Jesus gives us, in worship, in seeking to fulfill His will for us in this life, in serving others, wherever we may be. Yes, we're all going to dance. Some of us will perform the steps better than others, but all of us can seek to dance joyfully, exuberantly, worshipfully, meaningfully. May God give us good reason and courage to dance with all our might, right there in front of God and everybody. Amen.
Our Day One preacher today was the Reverend Peter Wallace, an Episcopal priest, author, president of the Alliance for Christian Media, and the executive producer and host of Day One. For a free printed transcript of his sermon, Let's Dance, call us toll free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. To listen again to today's program, share a sermon transcript, or watch inspiring videos, visit us online at dayone.org. And remember, Day One depends on the generous contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a tax-deductible donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week on Day One, Peter Wallace returns to his regular chair, and we're honored to have as our preacher the Reverend William E. Flippin, Jr., pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Atlanta, Georgia. His message is entitled, Counterfeit Clergy. Be sure to tune in for this powerful word next time on Day One. Peter Wallace offers some final reflections on today's message with our guest host, Kim Buchanan.
Peter, as you point out, this Sunday's lectionary texts from the Hebrew Scriptures and the Gospel both have a dance at the center, but very different dances, with far different purposes and results. King David danced for joy for the victorious return of the Ark of the Covenant. You asked, what might that have been like, to dance before God so openly, without inhibition or shame? Say more about that.
Well, I don't think that being free in the spirit would make me any better of a dancer than I am. I'm pretty lousy at dancing. But what I think David shows us here is an uninhibited worship of God. In other words, God has taken all our shame away. And one of the things that I have learned slowly over my life is to be a more authentic person, a more authentic Christian, an honest, open person, as honest and open as you can be, especially with God. You know, God knows everything already. There's no point in putting up any kind of pretense with God, but why do that with others too, especially people who trust you and know you? And so I think David gets at here, and it's something that maybe we all should strive for, is that authenticity, where we can worship God as ourselves as fully and wholly as we possibly can.
And then at Herod's banquet, his stepdaughter / niece dances so provocatively that Herod blurts out a promise which ends up with the murder of John the Baptist. You suggested that that dance, the one that becomes murderous, fits into our culture, functioning as an acceptable tool of those in power. It's the dance of the system. But the dance that is pure worship, the dance of the heart, somehow that dance becomes a scandal, at least to some.
Yeah, and you know, that was really true of Jesus's ministry as well. The dance of pure worship, the dance of being authentic before God, he was very real and very honest and very direct, particularly with those who were counter to the realm of God, the way of God. And so he got in trouble all the time. I mean, he was scandalous and in the world's eyes. So I'm wondering, why aren't we in the church in more trouble today, you know, as Jesus was? If we go all in with Jesus, if we're wholeheartedly following Jesus, maybe we should get into a little bit more good trouble, as Congressman John Lewis so often says. Good trouble because we're doing things for the sake of justice and peace and equality and those sorts of things.
You generally ask us preachers, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the days ahead? So, how would you answer that question?
Well, I would say that let's dance. Life is a dance. We're going to be dancing one way or the other, whether we're skilled or not at it. And the question isn't whether we dance or how we dance, it's why. And we have to ask ourselves, are we part of the culture, the system that is not really God's way of life? Or do we dance for the pure joy of worship, opening ourselves up to God's presence and God's will every day? You know, recently Donald Glover, the actor, came out in his rap identity as Childish Gambino with a video called This Is America. And he reveals all the violence and the inequality in our world behind him while he and others are dancing. There's violence, there's suicide, there's all kinds of things going on. And I think he captures in some way the idea of, yes, we're dancing. He's drawing attention to those ills that need attention. And so even though his dance in the video shows what the world is doing in ignoring those issues. By presenting that as a video, he is drawing attention to the need to deal with these. And I think that's the kind of dance that I'm talking about here, and that is the way of Jesus.
So let's dance.
Amen.
Peter Wallace, thank you for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you back at your regular microphone next week.
Thank you so much, Kimberly.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.